Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, we're going to talk about a few rule changes that have at least theoretically been agreed to between the union and the ownership, and we're going to talk about the Dodgers bullpen and how it stacks up with the rest of the National League West. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe in all those places so you never miss a day, because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder, and my co-host is Vince Samperio. We are doing a split episode today, so it'll be me for the first half, Vince for the second half. Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans just like you, and we've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, which is probably a good thing, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So please subscribe wherever you're watching or listening, and let's talk about some Dodgers after I tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. So as I mentioned, split episode today, I will be talking about the latest in the labor negotiations. Unfortunately, the lockout continues. No agreements were made. The union and the owners did meet this weekend. The union officially responded to ownership's proposal from the other day that the union had already rejected, but they actually made a counter proposal. Mixed reviews. Ownership thought it was a step backwards. Players obviously disagreed. But one thing that they've at least theoretically agreed to is some rule changes that would kick in 2023, next year. And so I'm going to talk about those three rule changes, my thoughts on those, what impact they have. They're the same three that we talked about briefly last week when ownership tried to sneak them in the middle of the night just before the deadline last week. And you know, our buddy Ross Stripling had some strong words about that. A lot of people weren't happy about that. But with the opportunity to actually look into them and stuff, it seems like they've agreed to those things. We're going to talk about each of those. And then, as I mentioned, second half of the episode, Vince will be continuing our series where we are breaking down the Dodgers, comparing them to the National League West. We did starting pitching last week. Every episode this week will have another element of the team. Today, it is relief pitching, the bullpens, how the Dodgers bullpen stacks up with the rest of the National League West. So that's what Vince will be talking about. So let's jump into these rule changes. Just a little programming note first. If you're watching, you may notice my camera angle is different. If you are a regular watcher, I'm just trying a few things in my office. So we're going to be experimenting. So you may get a few different angles over the next few days. But it's not like anybody's here to see me anyway. If anything, you're here to listen to me talk about the Dodgers and about baseball. So let's talk about these rule changes. Major League Baseball has been using the minor leagues and even the independent leagues the last few years as kind of a testing ground, a playground, to test out some of these rule changes. And some of them, they have thankfully recognized terrible idea, like moving the mound back. I hope that they have put that out of their mind forever. But a couple of them have maybe gotten enough traction that they do want to put them into the big leagues. Robot umps, unfortunately, are not on this list yet. I think the technology isn't quite there, although they will be doing that in AAA this year, which is just below the big leagues. They're going to be doing the robot umps, the automated strike zone, I think is what they call it. And so that's coming soon, but that is not something that has been agreed on yet. But let's talk first. The first one we'll talk about is bigger bases. This is one that they experiment with in the minor leagues. And there's a couple ideas behind bigger bases. If you extend each base, I think they added 3 inches in each direction on the base. And so basically from first to second base, that actually cuts 6 inches off the distance between first base and second base. We know there's 90 feet between bases, but it's not actually 90 feet between the bases. It's between the end of the base and the other end of the base. And so adding 3 inches to each side of the base cuts 6 inches off the distance between the bases. Now, 6 inches doesn't feel like a lot, but they say baseball is a game of inches, and there's a reason they say that, and that's because it's true. I mean, how many times have you seen a guy stealing second or getting thrown out, caught stealing, and it was, you know, within inches? Like, within 6 inches, that's actually a decent amount. And so cutting 6 inches off the distance between first and second base, I think, will help the running game. It also cuts 3 inches off the distance between home plate and first base, which means, you know, those bang bang plays at first base, they're going to go the hitter's way more often. Where a guy, how many times you've seen a play where, wow, if the base was 3 inches closer, he would have been safe, but instead he was out. One thing that really jumps out at me is a guy like Trey Turner, who hits a lot of ground balls, has a ton of speed, one of the fastest guys in baseball, steals bases. This rule, the bigger base, is kind of built for him. It lets players get a slightly bigger lead off first base because first base is 3 inches closer to them now. So they can get a bigger lead. They can, you know, cut down the distance between first and second, cut down the distance between home and first. The design is to make the game more exciting. One ancillary benefit that I think they probably took into account, I don't know if it was the main motivator, is it will make the game a little bit safer because you got, basically it's going to be harder for Manny Machado to intentionally kick a guy in the calf because his calf will be 3 inches farther away from Manny Machado's foot. And sometimes people actually do that on accident. Remember a couple of years ago, Matt Beatty, I think in 2019, Matt Beatty had an incident with Philadelphia. I think it was Reese Hoskins at first base that Beatty accidentally stepped on Reese Hoskins. And, you know, Philly fans got all up in arms about it. Obviously, we all know Matt Beatty is not a dirty player. It wasn't on purpose, no intent there. So it makes things a little bit safer. I don't know that it would have helped Max Muncy's elbow injury. That was just a fluke thing. But overall, it does make the game a little bit safer and a little bit more exciting. And there's not really a downside to it. The downside is if you're a pitcher or a defensive team, it makes infield singles easier. It makes stolen bases easier. But in a game where we are trying to boost the offense, get more excitement going. And honestly, the running game is one of the most exciting parts of baseball that has kind of gone by the wayside. Keith Law and I talked a little bit about that last week. It's gone by the wayside a little bit. And so this is a little step towards getting a little bit more excitement in the game. I'm all for it. I don't think it's a huge change, but I think in the few ways that it will have a little impact, it will be a positive impact. So I'm in favor of that. So the other two rule changes that we're going to come back and talk about in a minute are pitch clock and banning the shift, both of which maybe a little bit more controversial, but I will give you my thoughts on those when we come back. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. Hey, football season might be over for this season, but basketball is in full steam for both pro and college hoops. From all the latest odds, totals, player performance, props, to where the next fired coach is going to land, BetOnline.net is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline.net is your source for hockey, boxing, UFC, odds, everything else, and all the coverage and information for all the sports. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Really quick, I want to tell you, please check out Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby, he is a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. So, the other two rule changes that have been agreed to are banning the shift and the pitch clock. Let's talk pitch clock first. Banning the shift, we may end up talking, I'm sure we're going to talk more about this in future episodes, but the pitch clock, basically what it boils down to is pitchers take too long between pitches. And if they can, there's about 300 pitches per game. So if they could cut down 5 seconds between pitches, that cuts 25 minutes off of the average game. And this is it's a hot button topic for a lot of people. A lot of people say baseball is perfect. Don't mess with this. It's one of the great things about baseball is that there's no clock, blah, 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 blah. The fact is there are clocks in baseball already. The reason that people keep saying there's no clock in baseball is because they're so unobtrusive that we don't even notice them because they're doing their job. And that's the way the pitch clock would be too. Like right now, as soon as the third out of an inning is made, clock out in center field turns on, counting down the time between innings, the time between until the pitcher has to make the first pitch of the next inning. That's a clock. When after every play, a 30-second clock pops up and it starts counting down because that's how long teams have to challenge a play. And as soon as they start the next play, they turn off the clock. You don't even notice it. As soon as a pitching coach or manager steps out of the dugout, 30-second clock turns on because they have 30 seconds for their visit from the time they leave the dugout. There are clocks in baseball. You just don't notice them because they work. They do their job. Nobody ever gets in trouble for taking too long in a mound visit, but mound visits got faster when they implemented that clock. The same thing will be true with the pitch clock. They've had it in the minor leagues for a long time, so major league pitchers grew up with the pitch clock, so they should be ready for it. It won't be a huge adjustment for them, and it won't, you know, cause any issues. The rule book, the pitch clock they're implementing isn't even going to be as strict as what the rule book actually says. I think the rule book says 12 seconds, and I assume this pitch clock is going to be like 20 seconds. But what it's going to do, you know, theoretically, a pitcher could have a ball called on him if he doesn't deliver the pitch in time. Okay, that's never going to happen because just the threat of it being able to happen is enough. The fact that the clock exists, pitcher will see, okay, I have this much time. I'm going to throw my next pitch now. It's going to work and it's going to speed up the game in a way that nobody will even notice. You will just think, I just went to a baseball game that was just like every other baseball game I've gone to, except it was 15 or 20 minutes shorter. Huh, cool. And, you know, when people talk about pace of play, one of the things they get confused a lot of times is they start talking about the length of the games. People actually say, well, we should just do 7-inning games. Come on, stupid. That's less baseball. But the pitch clock isn't less baseball. It's less standing around between pitches. And, you know, it's always funny to me that the old school fans are always like, why are you messing with my baseball? Baseball's never had clocks. You millennials got no attention spans. But the fact is, when I was a kid, you know, we've established I'm old. I'm almost 45 years old. Old. But when I was a kid, back when baseball was just as perfect as it is right now, games were a half hour shorter than they are right now. And they've done research. And the reason that games are longer is because of the time between pitches. A lot of people point to the longer commercial breaks. That is not the issue. If you're thinking it is, listen, I'm going to briefly explain it. Commercial breaks used to be shorter. There weren't as many commercials. But when they came back from the commercial break, Harry Carey would talk for another minute while we watched the pitcher finish his warm-up pitches, and then they'd start. The actual time between innings wasn't any different than it is now. It's just the commercial breaks were shorter. So now they're just filling that dead time between innings with actual commercials, which generate revenue. For some people, that upsets them. Well, generating revenue on my time? But the fact is, the actual between innings haven't got longer. Pitchers need to warm up. That's not going to, you can't make them much shorter. And even if you shorten them by 20 seconds each, that's like 5.5 minutes that you're cutting off a game. It's not a huge issue. The main difference, the reason games have gotten so much longer, is entirely time between pitches. So if we could cut 5 seconds off that, some pitchers might even cut more off. You know, that will do a lot to make baseball a little bit faster paced. And for me as a dad, especially I live in the mountain time zone, so my Dodger games already don't start till 8 o'clock here. I would love it if games are 2.5 hours that, you know, I could, you know, finish the game by 10:30. My kids could even maybe stay up to watch most of a game, even on a school night. You know, yeah, you can stay up till 10. Sure. You'll get to see most of the game. Right now, there's no chance of a game getting over before 11, my time. And that makes it, you know, harder for my kids to be baseball fans. Harder if you're going to a baseball game, taking your kids to a game. No way you can take kids on a school night. You basically got to check them out of school the next day because, you know, by the time the game gets over and you get out of Dodger Stadium parking lot and everything, you know, it's a long night. And so as a parent, I love the idea. And you guys know it. I love baseball. I don't want less baseball. But if I could get the same amount of baseball in a half hour less time, that for me is a perfect solution. And, you know, every game I go to, I hope for extra innings because it's more baseball, but I would hope even harder for extra innings if the first 9 innings only took 2.5 hours instead of 3 hours and 10 minutes or whatever. I don't think we'll ever get back to 2.5 hours, but pitch clock will be a step in the right direction. So I'm 1,000% in favor. The last one I want to talk about is banning the shift. This one is very controversial. The fact is the shift is smart baseball. The reason that smart teams do it is because it's smart. But it has had a negative impact on offense. Not as much as some people think, not even in the way that people think. But, you know, when people say, and a lot of smart people say this, a lot of pro ball players say this, well, you just need to make adjustments. You need to learn to hit the other way. But Cody Bellinger, when he's hitting the other way, it's fine. But I would rather have hitters hitting the ball hard. And it's almost impossible for an adult baseball player to learn how to hit the ball hard the opposite way if he hasn't been doing that his whole life. It's just not going to happen. It's like, it's basically the same argument as when people say, if pitchers would just try to be better hitters, they could be better hitters. They're pro athletes. They could hit. No, they can't. Pitchers are never going to learn how to hit, and hitters are never going to learn how to hit the ball hard the opposite way. Yeah, they could bunt more. They could slap the ball, and sometimes that's fun. I do enjoy once in a while when Bellinger shortens up his swing, slaps a little ball to left field. Sometimes he even gets it right down the line, gets a double out of it. But know what else I enjoy? Cody Bellinger hitting a home run, which he isn't going to do with the opposite field swing. Ted Williams used to get shifted on. You know, people act like the shift is a new thing. Lou Boudreau, manager of the Indians, used to shift on Ted Williams. And it was the same conversation. Reporters would tell him, just learn to go the other way. And Williams said, no, I'm just going to hit it over the shift. And he hit 521 career home runs and was the best hitter in baseball history, probably. And that was with being shifted on. But not everybody's like Ted Williams. And so for me, banning the shift, we don't know exactly how they would implement it. I assume it would be something like, you have to have two infielders on each side of second base, and they have to be positioned in front of the outfield grass. You know what? I'm fine with that. I kind of miss the days when I was a kid, and even when I was a teenager and an adult, just adult, an adult with brown hair instead of gray. If you hit a line drive up the middle, that was a hit. Now, it's a one hopper to the second baseman, and you get thrown out at first or hit into a double play. Like, I kind of miss line drives out the middle being hits. And, you know, it's, I don't know that banning the shift would be high on my list of priorities. It's one of those things where I'm fine if they do, I'm fine if they don't, but I'm definitely fine if they do. I don't think it's a bad thing. There are plenty of things that, you know, even though, you know, what I hear people say is, well, it's just smart baseball to do the shift. Okay. It would be smart baseball to do a lot of things that are against the rules. And the fact is, if you make a rule against something, then it's no longer smart baseball to do that thing. And that's fine. So the shift, it has been around for 80 years. And if it goes away, I'm okay with that. I don't care one way or the other. But I do think adding excitement back a little bit, you know, having more gaps in the infield where hitters actually hit the ball, I think that maybe will add to excitement. And, you know, maybe it helps the strikeout scourge, because if there is more incentive to put the ball in play because you have a better chance of getting it through the infield, well, then maybe you're swinging for the fences less, because, you know, like I said, Ted Williams' solution to the shift was hit over the shift. Now, Ted Williams had 2011 vision. He had freakishly good eyesight, hand-eye coordination, and so he could swing hard and also never strike out. Ted Williams was a freak of nature. Cody Bellinger, in order to hit those home runs, has to swing hard. You know, if Cody Bellinger knew, you know what, I can hit an occasional ground ball, I don't have to elevate and celebrate every time, maybe that does create some more excitement. There will be unintended consequences. We don't know what they're going to be, but overall, I don't think banning the shift will be a negative thing for baseball. In the aggregate, there will be some things that are worse, but there will be some things that are better. I think it'll at least even out, probably. So that's my thoughts on the three rule changes. Like I said, Vince is going to be here in a minute. He's going to talk to you about the Dodgers bullpen and how it stacks up with the rest of the National League West. So I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And Vince will be along in a minute.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. No other competition, hands down. Built Bar, you got to check it out. They have candy bar taste, protein bar numbers, and it all combines to be a really good bar that's covered in 100% real chocolate. They also have Built Bar Puffs that are the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. Now, these are delicious. They do taste even more like a candy bar. They still have the same great macros, low calorie, low sugar, low carbs, high protein, high fiber, everything you could want in a protein bar, but it tastes great. And Built Bar has a bunch of different flavors. They're always adding flavors. They have already a bunch of great flavors like cinnamon churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie for the puffs. They got a bunch of other flavors for the protein for the Built Bars. You got to go check it out. They're always adding flavors. You can get a mixed box. Check them all out. Do whatever you need to do, but you need to get Built Bar in your life. I'm being 100% serious. I have spent my own hard-earned money on Built Bars, and you should too. So go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your order. That's Built.com with the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off. This episode is also brought to you by Rock Auto. With ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now possible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. So why go to the store and end up ordering the piece that you could have just ordered from wherever you want instead of going to the store? You can just order to get it directly shipped to you and for cheaper pricing. You can sometimes spend up to 30, 50, even 100% more on the same parts from the local auto chain store or car dealership. For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store, $216 from Rock Auto. There's really no reason for you not to check out rockauto.com. They got a nice little website there. You can find all the parts for your car or truck. You can find everything you need from brake parts, tail lamps, even down to new carpet. Everything you need is at rockauto.com. Go check out their website today. Find the solution to your auto part needs. And when they ask, how did you hear about us, write Locked On in the box to let them know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. All right, we are here, and I am here, Vince Samperio of Shows Dream Fiends, to close out today's episode. And we're talking bullpens, and we're talking how the Dodgers bullpen stacks up in the NL West. And, you know, I've talked about the bullpen a lot this offseason, and I think it's one of the strengths of the Dodgers, if not the biggest strength for the Dodgers at the moment. And I believe that is going to carry over into the season, and I believe that's going to let the Dodgers be the best bullpen in the NL West. But, however, you do have to look at last year, just real quick. Obviously, some names changed, some players will change, but last year, the Dodgers were the second best bullpen in the National League behind the Giants, who had the best bullpen in the National League, and then the Padres were third, and then you got the Rockies and Diamondbacks 12th and 14th in the National League, respectively. And I would imagine it's going to shake out around the same way, except the Dodgers and Giants will flip-flop. Now, this all begins with the big caveat that relievers are volatile, bullpens are volatile, and you never really know what's going to happen in a bullpen, or you never really know what's going to happen with the reliever. And, you know, that's not me hedging any bets. That's just any team. Like, that could be the Dodgers, that could be the Diamondbacks, that could be the Rockies, that could be anybody having a season way better than they thought, or having seasons not as good as they thought. But at the end of the day, I think the Dodgers right now have the biggest strength in the bullpen. They got the most depth, and they got, you know, the best arms at the top. And I'll just name some names that could be in the bullpen. Obviously, not all of them will be in there. But you got Phil Bickford, Justin Brule, Garrett Clevenger, Caleb Ferguson. Tony Gonsolin could potentially be in there. Victor Gonzalez. You got Daniel Hudson. You got Tommy Canley. You got Evan Phillips. You got Blake Treinen. You got Alex Vesia. And then Mitch White, I guess, potentially as well. But I mean, right off the bat, you got Bruce Dark Gratterall, who I missed. So right off the bat, I mean, you got Blake Treinen, one of the better relievers in all of baseball, who will theoretically slide into the closer role for this year. You know, realistically, the Dodgers might go with like less of a closer and more of a figure it out. You know, if there's bases loaded in the seventh inning with one out, they might go to Blake Treinen at that point and then let somebody else close out the game because they trust the other relievers that they have. But at this point, Blake Treinen would be the, you know, quote unquote closer, unless they somehow bring back Kenley Jansen. That's the other part too with these rankings. These are the current rankings as of now. Obviously, when baseball is back and the lockout is over, teams can sign players. There's not too many game-changing relievers out there, but there are some relievers that could, you know, change where I think the Dodgers stack up, or if they stack up a little bit less than they did before. Kenley Jansen being probably the best reliever left in terms of length of career and how he did last year, but I don't know if he's going to go to any of the NOS teams, and I don't expect him to be back with the Dodgers. So, I mean, just based on the strength of everything I mentioned, yeah, I think the Dodgers will have the best bullpen. What's going to potentially change that? Well, Caleb Ferguson and Tommy Kahnle, you're expecting them to be serviceable to good major league relievers based on what they did the last time they were healthy. But also, you can't count on that. You don't know. Coming back from injury, you know, could they be more susceptible to injury? Could they, you know, maybe not have the same stuff they had beforehand? Could it take them a while to figure it out? That's kind of where the big question mark lies. You also have question marks. You know, everyone's a question mark. You know, Bruce Dargrado had a weird year last year, really turned it up late in the season. You would imagine he's going to come in, you know, getting some 7, 8, and ninth innings this year. But also, you know, we thought that maybe coming off the season he had in 2020 and then ended up starting the year in the minors and didn't really start becoming a major league reliever toward the middle of the year and wasn't really a guy the Dodgers trusted until late in the year. So we don't know. That flip side of that, Victor Gonzalez, or similar side of that, Victor Gonzalez had a lot of expectations coming in after a great 2020 season, never really quite figured it out, and then ended up, you know, getting hurt and staying in the minors and never quite working his way up. As what we saw earlier this offseason is that he was working out, dropped some weight, was ready to go for 2022. So maybe he comes back and, you know, he throws his hat back in the ring as one of those relievers. And then you got a guy like, you know, who I'm going to talk about some of these other guys on the other teams. You got guys like Alex Vesia and Phil Bickford, who both came in and filled roles in that bullpen and were at different points dominant in that bullpen. And you never know, are they going to be able to replicate that success? Are they going to, you know, fall like Victor Gonzalez did and struggle in the second year? We don't know. You would imagine that they will be able to replicate the success. I think I have more faith in Vesia replicating than Phil Bickford, since Vesia has a little bit more of stuff-wise and coming from the left side, whereas Phil Bickford, you know, kind of was a mix of, I guess, his weird delivery and some of his stuff and, you know, a mixture of different things. He doesn't quite have, you know, lights out stuff. So that's part of it. The other thing that can be added to this Dodger bullpen is Dustin May at some point. You know, I'm not sure what the Dodgers' plan is for when he comes back. Are they going to try to build him back up to a starter? Are they going to keep him in the bullpen? I guess it's going to all depend on when he comes back, how strong he is, and what the Dodgers' needs are at that point. But theoretically, if you added Dustin May to the bullpen at some point and they'd say, you know what, this year he'll get his innings in, 2 or 3 innings at a time. We don't want to build him up all the way to the starter. You know, we want to ease him in, but we want to make sure he's there. You know, that's another devastating arm to the bullpen. And the Dodgers did add Daniel Hudson, who has had ups and downs. I mean, realistically, we saw the downs when he was with the Dodgers a few years ago. We saw the ups when he was with the Nationals beating the Dodgers in the 2019 NLDS. So, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. He has been more good than bad in recent years, but he also could turn bad again real quick. So we're not quite sure where that lines up. And then you got, you know, even down to the depth guys, Evan Phillips, Justin Brule, two guy, Garrett Clevenger. These are guys that came and got outs last year in big situations and, you know, probably pitched a lot more in the majors with the Dodgers than they expected, especially since, you know, since some of those are not Clevenger, but that's just since Phillips didn't even start the year with the Dodgers. So, but those are guys that are already 7, 8, 9 on your depth chart in terms of bullpen. So the Dodgers are going to be well off. Now we're looking over at, let's look over at the Giants, who were the best bullpen in baseball last year and in the National League for sure. And it's kind of similar to what you think about the Dodgers or any bullpen, I guess. But, you know, they had Camilo Duvall really come out of nowhere and become a big part of that bullpen last year. And he would theoretically slot into their closer role this year. And yeah, he has good stuff and he was really good last year, but you know, who knows what he's going to do in his second year of, you know, facing big leaguers and having, you know, being scouted and everything else. You're not entirely sure. The good thing is, I mean, they do have two more veteran guys that are a little more established behind them in Jake McGee, Tyler Rogers. And it's also a matter of, you know, Jake McGee, at some point you think he's going to get figured out just throwing maybe 95% fastballs. But hey, it worked out for the Dodgers in the year before. It worked out for the Giants last year. You know, maybe he just has that special sauce in his fastball that people can't figure out, and he's able to use that to his advantage. That's very possible. You got Tyler Rogers, who was, you know, the side or the submarine slide arming, slow tossing pitcher that they had, who was closer for most of the year after Jake McGee kind of lost the closer role. You know, Will Smith had that one walk-off home run against him. The Dodgers did hit him pretty well compared to other teams, probably because they saw him so many times. But even then, you know, he's a guy who, if he's not tricking you, if he's not fooling you with the delivery, then the stuff is coming in very slow. And, you know, he works up in the zone for the most part, and you're able to put some good wood on it if you, you know, can time it up. And I think the Dodgers have a good chance of doing that. I don't know if other teams do, so Tyler Rogers should still be good in general next year. So when you got that, those three in the back end of your bullpen, you're pretty good. I would definitely put up, you know, I definitely would put up Blake Treinen, Bruisdar Gratterall, and, you know, any of the others that I mentioned, you know, Canely, Ferguson, Vesia, one of those, or one of those three, or even anyone else against those three, and I think they stack up pretty well, pretty evenly. But again, it's all going to come down to, you know, what it works out to. Now, the Giants bullpen is interesting. You know, looking at other teams' bullpens, interesting, because realistically, the Dodgers play them, yeah, 18 times, 19 times a year, and you remember some of the names, but you don't. You know, you don't know how they did against the rest of this. You don't know how they did the rest of the season. You just kind of remember how they did against the Dodgers. And then you go to the bullpen, and there's no names here. There's Dominic Leone, Kervin Castro, Jose Alvarez, Zach Littell. Those are probably some of the guys in the next tier for the Giants bullpen. You know, I remember Dominic Leone. I remember Jose Alvarez. Like, I remember the names. I don't remember necessarily how they did against the Dodgers specifically. They're not any guys that are, like I said, big names or established names. They're guys that, you know, what the Giants are going to count on it. And this is the big part of the Giants in 2022. The Giants in 2021, it was a matter of, okay, they're bound to fall. They never really fell. You know, they beat the Dodgers for the NL West. They won one more game than the Dodgers. They never really fell off. But it's also a matter of, okay, eventually they, you know, you thought they were going to fall. Eventually they would fall. And they didn't, and it's stuff like this with the bullpen. Unknown guys. The Dodgers have done it before. Other teams have done it before. Unknown guys step up into a role, and they're good for a year. But you can't guarantee that they're going to be good to the next year. So that, I think the Dodgers have more established guys than the Giants, which is why I expect the Dodgers bullpen to be a little bit better. You know, I will say that in terms of bullpen management, Dave Roberts and Gabe Kapler are very similar. They, you know, they both follow a combination of their gut and the numbers, and, you know, they both have a strong system of analytics and everything else to help them out. So it's going to be close. I think they're going to be close. I think the Giants, you know, they're in that same realm now with Zaidi at the helm, where even if some of these guys don't work out, they'll have guys that they'll be able to fill in. They'll have guys that they pick up off the waivers and are able to, you know, slot in and be good. And they'll have a better sense of that. So when it comes down to the NOS, I think it comes down to the Giants and Dodgers for bullpen. I do think the Dodgers have the better bullpen. But also, if I was a Giants fan or someone that covered the Giants on a more regular basis, I might think the other way, because I'm more familiar with guys like Dominic Leone and Alvarez and even Harlan Garcia and guys like that. The one name I do want to see on the Giants bullpen is John Brebbia, because the Dodgers did rough him up a few times. And I like when Brebbia came in, I did feel more comfortable as a Dodger fan. So that's where they stack up with that. You know, realistically, I'm going to not talk too much about the Diamondbacks and Rockies. I don't expect any of them to be that good in terms of regular, like the team being that good. And they don't necessarily have anyone in the bullpen that really, you know, does it for you. The Rockies bullpen was bad last year. They didn't really add anybody. They still have Daniel Bard, who had a cool 2020 season coming back from injury, after having not played for 6 years. But then was not that great last year. Lost the closer role. They've got guys that, you know, we remember their names. Ulysse Chassin, who's been around, seems like forever. There's always been a Chassin around. They got guys, you know, Carlos Estevez, Tyler Kinley, Yency Almonte, Justin Lawrence. Those are all guys that we remember their names, but they didn't necessarily, you know, do anything. They brought in, I think they got a guy from the Reds, Stevenson, who came in and did pretty good for them in the last part of the season. But there's nobody that scares you. There's nobody that, you know, the Dodgers should really be concerned about, I would say. And I would imagine that they're going to remain around the bottom of the league and the division in terms of the bullpen. Diamondbacks, you know, similar. They could be better, definitely better than the Rockies. But they don't really have anybody else that really, you know, has people shaking in their boots, as they say. They did sign Mark Melancon, who will now be their closer. The Dodgers have had varying successes from Mark Melancon, or varying success against Mark Melancon, but he's probably on the other side of things. And at the end of the day, I don't expect the Diamondbacks to be leading the Dodgers too many times, so they might not see Mark Melancon as often as they could anyways. And then after that, you got, you know, a bunch of guys that we've heard of, but again, guys that the Dodgers have either had success against before or they're just not that good. I mean, you look at these ERAs. I'll just go down some of the players that you're expected to be on the bullpen. Caleb Smith, Noy Ramirez, Stephon, Stephen Crichton, Kevin Ginkle, Taylor Widener, Joseph Mansupply, Matt Peacock, J.B. Bukauskas, Brett Guss, former Dodger prospect, and Ryan Buchter. You go down some of these ERAs. You got 4.78, 4.42, 6, 5.54, 5.02, 4.42, 4.06, 4.79, 4.86, 4.50, 6.0. So nobody that's putting any fear into the Dodgers hitting. I don't know. I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be good. They have potential to be decent, to disrupt a little bit, but they're fourth place. I expect them to be fourth place in the division. I expect them to be fourth place in bullpen. So there's not too much to talk about there. Now, the Padres is an interesting one. No, they were third in the NL, but honestly, I don't know if you can expect them to be that way. And even then, they were an interesting case last year. First half, their bullpen was really good. Second half, their bullpen was not so good, which coincided with, you know, them kind of falling apart in the second half of the season. They don't really have a closer as it stands right now. They did sign Robert Suarez, who's coming over from Japan. Who's been really good in Japan the last two seasons. Didn't allow a home run at all last year in Japan. I don't expect that to carry over into the big leagues. But, you know, he's a guy that nobody's seen before. He could theoretically have a good year this first year just due to that, due to his stuff. He does have good stuff. But, you know, they're counting on him to maybe be the closer at this point, and that's a lot of stock to put into a guy who hasn't pitched in the majors and who's coming from Japan. Drew Pomeranz is probably their best reliever in terms overall. He's coming off injury. I know he got surgery late in the year last year. I don't know. He didn't get Tommy John, I think flexor tendon. So I don't know if he'll be ready for opening day, or maybe he will be if opening day keeps getting pushed back. But, you know, he's a guy that has done well against the Dodgers. He's a guy that's a pretty good reliever. And I would expect once he's healthy and ready to go, he's going to factor into those late innings. But then you have a bunch of guys who, like I said, the Dodgers have done well against, or at least were good against at some point. They got, you know, Luis Garcia is a guy who they had last year. You know, he was pretty decent. They had, Emilio Pagan, our favorite guy last year, who, you know, gave the Dodgers a couple games or one game at least for sure. Austin Adams, who couldn't find the strike zone, who hit a bunch of guys. They got Nabil Crisma, who would be kind of a long reliever type. They got the other Javi Guerra. They got Tim Hill, Pierce Johnson, a bunch of names that we remember. But like I said, nobody that necessarily is striking fear into the Dodgers or even into anyone else. So while I don't think the Padres' bullpen will be as good as last year, I do think they will obviously by default kind of finish here in third place in the division, and that's kind of where it sits. So that's how it goes. I probably went maybe more in depth than we needed to for this, but hey, you know what? What's an extra 10 minutes to your listening today? Appreciate you guys for being here. That's going to be it for me. That's going to be it for the episode. Thanks for checking out Locked On Dodgers. We'll stack up the Dodgers against the NOS in some other categories the rest of this week. Hopefully talking some lockout, more lockout stuff in terms of lockout ending. Maybe start talking about some minor leaguers since minor leaguers are in camp. And Diego Cartaya did hit a bomb the other day, so maybe we'll start talking about some of those guys. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to check out Locked On Dodgers wherever you find podcasts and on YouTube. We're on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Samperio. If you want to call and leave us a voicemail or send us a text, you can do so at 323-863-5625. Or you can send us an email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us when you get in your car or if you're at home. Tell your smart device play podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.